Blog Talk Radio.
And Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pentecow.
And we got an action-packed program for you tonight. We have two mixed martial arts guests. One of them is Mike Mesenzio, just had a fight on UFC 136, beat Ryan Cantwell in a come-from-behind fashion. And we also have Ryan Martinez, who's a young up-and-coming fighter from Colorado, 5-1. And he's a heavyweight out there in Colorado, ranked number 3 behind Brendan Schaub and another guy. Can't think of at the moment. Shane Carwin, something. Anyway, these two guys definitely can tell us a lot about mixed martial arts. Mesenzio has been in and out of the UFC, so we'll talk about that. And what's next for him after this win to keep him in the league, I guess. There was a lot of talk about whoever lost that fight was probably going to have to pack their bags out of the league. So that's part of his story. And then we also, of course, have to talk about the big changes. UFC 137, which is already screwy to begin with. We had Nick Diaz getting denied his title shot with George St. Pierre. And they didn't show up to these press conferences, so that's why they switched him. They switched him to fight BJ Penn. Then we had a situation where George St. Pierre injured himself in training. So now, he's not fighting Carlos Condit in the main event. Carlos Condit has to wait for that fight now. And the BJ Penn fight with Nick Diaz is still on, but now they're all talking about trying to go 5 rounds with it since it's now the main event. So it's ridiculous. But that's October 29th, next Saturday. So it's definitely going to be a good card. We'll talk a little bit about that later. We had to talk about Bernard Hopkins versus Chad Dawson last week. Probably one of the most controversial fights since Floyd Mayweather and Ortiz.
Well, it's like the last fight of major boxing pay-per-views has been more controversial than the one prior. I'm afraid to see what's going to happen with Pacquiao and Marquez. It's like Marquez is going to bring a cup of his urine in the ring and like drink it, then spit it back all over Pacquiao? God only knows. This year in boxing, first of all, I did not order the fight. As you heard my recap last week, not my recap, but my preview last week, I wasn't expecting it to be an exciting fight. I did not expect what happened to happen, of course. I definitely was glad I didn't order it. But there was a fight where I didn't think the styles meshed very well, to be totally honest. Now, it was funny. I was following two blogs that were detailing the fight. I was supposed to go out last Saturday night, and that canceled at the last minute. I was, I'm still not feeling a whole 100%. So I decided to just kick back, work on some media things that I'm doing, and I just followed the fight online. So I'm reading two reports. And I'm not talking about, two 13-year-olds writing about the fight. I'm talking about two respected you know, sports websites that were covering his fight. And the first one was saying how like Dawson was dominating, Hopkins looked old, Dawson was landing clean punches, Hopkins looked slower by a step, like couldn't get his punches off, and he looked like he aged overnight. Had Dawson clearly winning the first round, had Dawson winning in the second round up until the time of the controversy. The second report that I read had said it was a uneventful first round, that Hopkins was able to pretty much parry all of Dawson's punches, didn't land much himself, but he was the better ring general, and gave Hopkins the first round. Also gave Hopkins the second round up until the stoppage point. So you got two completely different takes on what was happening in that lane. I've only seen clips on replay. I did see the ending, what happened. And to give people that didn't see it kind of a recap of what happened, you know, Hopkins throws a lead right hand and Dawson ducked well at the waist, almost like he was up bending over to take a bow. And Hopkins, you know, went over top of him and was kind of leaning on him. At that point, Dawson went to get up, but you'll see with his left arm kind of hook Hopkins around, like, his one leg. Like, he was almost going for, like, a single leg takedown in wrestling. And then he lurched up, and Hopkins went down almost in a sitting position, and he kind of like landed, ass and elbows, his back at the ropes, and then his head went under the ropes. And, he got up and was, saying that he hurt his shoulder. And then the referee said there was no foul. And Hopkins said, I'll fight him with one arm. And then they said, no, you can't do that. We're calling a stoppage. Since there was no foul, it's a TKO. Now, you have to there's two sides of the story. The one story is Hopkins, was struggling out there and was looking for a way out. And then the other side, that it was a legitimate injury. And I have Bernard Hopkins' stories from the past that can almost validate both points. Well, the one point was back in 2000 in his second fight with Antoine Eccles. Eccles tackled Hopkins, and Hopkins hurt his right shoulder. It was a different kind of dislocation, but Hopkins hurt his right shoulder. And he was on the stool, and they were going to disqualify Eccles for a blatant foul. And Hopkins said no, got up and fought one round with his left arm only and kicked Eccles' ass, then turned around and was able to start using his right arm again and ended up knocking Eccles out in the 10th round. About a year or so before that, Hopkins was fighting a guy by the name of Robert Allen. They ended up fighting three times. This is their first fight. And in the first two or three rounds, Hopkins was struggling a little bit. Allen was a southpaw. He was a physical guy, similar to Chad Dawson. And they were in a clinch. As Mills Lane, the referee, went to break the clinch up, Hopkins fell out of the ring and twisted his ankle. They called it a no contest. And then you got to remember, we had the issue in the Roy Jones fight last year, when Hopkins took the punch in the back of the head, was laying on the canvas for a while, calling foul. So now you have, an example of Hopkins in the past with the Roy Jones fight, on the ground calling foul. You have the example in the Robert Allen fight back in, I think it was like 1998 or 19, I think it was 1998, where he fell out of the ring and, quote-unquote, hurt his ankle, and, they called it a no contest.
So now you have evidence where Hopkins has done something like this in the past. On the contrary, you also have evidence where Hopkins has fought through an injury like this and has fought with one arm. So now it's really hard. I mean, both sides can point to Hopkins' past as evidence to validate their own point. Like I said, just before we got on the air tonight, I saw a report that got sent out on Facebook that the WBC has overturned the decision and has awarded the title belt back to Hopkins. Now, I don't know if that that's what the WBC is doing with their belt, but on the other end, I don't know if that will overturn the California state decision, which has Dawson winning by second round TKO.
Yeah, I mean, I've never even heard of a fight being overturned after the fact.
I have.
Drug contests, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've had that. Trying to think of some other major situations where the ruling, I don't think the ruling can be overturned on a bad decision. It's like, say they fought and, Hopkins was like keeping Dawson's ass every round and Dawson gets the decision. There's nothing you can do on that. The decision is the decision. But in a situation like this, I've seen things in the past get overturned like that. A perfect example was back in mid to late 80s. He was a fighter by the name of Marlon Carlton. He was a welterweight champion of the world. Fought a guy by the name of Tomas Molinares. And the fight was relatively competitive through the first six rounds. And the bell rang to end the sixth round. And about a second or two after the bell rang, Molinares nailed Sterling with a one hand, knocked him out. I mean, out cold. And the referee counted and awarded Molinares the title via knockout. I mean, Sterling was so out of it. Like, they were interviewing him after the fight, and they're like, "You just lost your title." And he's like, "Huh, what?" They're like, "How does it feel being knocked out?" He goes, "Knocked out." He goes, "I wasn't knocked out." Well, sure you were. He goes, "No, I wasn't." He goes, "How was I knocked out when I wasn't even knocked down?" Like, you were on the canvas for 2 minutes. But that ended up getting overturned and ruled a no contest because the punch that landed that scored the knockout was clearly after the bell.
Yeah, I saw the replay and I thought to myself, immediately after the fact, I thought it was a foul. And then I started watching the replay and look how Chad Dawson kind of doesn't grab that leg, his hand slips off of it because he's wearing the glove, so he doesn't really grab that leg to throw him. He does it all with the shoulder push.
Right.
It's not really a foul, it's just trying to get some separation.
Well, if it was an intentional foul, the only course there would be disqualification. Like, say they were fighting, and remember the Mayweather-Ortiz fight. Let's use that as an example. In the fourth round before the knockout, Ortiz, landed an intentional, or he intentionally headbutted Mayweather in the face. Now, say he did that and shattered Mayweather's nose. Well, obviously you can't award Ortiz a TKO for that.
Right.
And that would be, and if it was an unintentional foul, like they just clashed heads, and you've seen a lot of fights. Two guys clash heads unintentionally, forces a cut, the fight gets stopped. If it goes after so many rounds, they'll go to the cards. If it's before the set number of rounds, it'll be a technical draw or a no contest. Say Ortiz shattered Mayweather's nose, they would say, well, that was obviously an intentional headbutt. It was an intentional foul. Ortiz must be disqualified. Now, there could be argument saying that Dawson did reach around his leg, and it looked like he pushed Hopkins to the ground to cause the injury. But like you just said, he did kind of let go. He was just kind of trying to shoulder him off. So it would be more of an unintentional foul, which would lead to the no contest ruling.
Right. And there's a little bit of controversy over whether the injury was real.
Well, there was a medical report that came out and did say there was a separation.
Right. And I just got this email from John Skelly.
That's all, too. He sent me the same thing.
And there's a little bit of controversy on, you know, whether you could just get away with that diagnosis without an MRI and all that, you know, confirming how bad it is, number one, and you know, number two, if it's even there, you know, or else he's just given the right description of what's wrong with him. So there's a little bit of issue there. If they're going to challenge the ruling, I guess the Scully and Dawson camp there should hire an expert if they want to keep it. But I think they should just have an immediate rematch anyway. You know, so whatever they decide to do with this original fight, they obviously have to fight again.
Well, that's the thing, is that Dawson doesn't want to give him a rematch now. Now that Hopkins has the belt back, now what happens?
Yeah. It's crazy that it ended that way. And I don't know, I would think that the way Hopkins was reacting, it was definitely a real injury. But, you know, it's just kind of a fluke ending. It's one of those things. But anyway, we got some big-time fights this weekend. A lot of good fights. Our former guest there, not too long ago, a couple weeks ago or a week ago, I don't even know. Edwin Rodriguez. Fighting Will Rosinski, 19-0 versus 14-0. Rodriguez.
Somebody's
Yep. Rodriguez has 14 knockouts to his 19 wins. Rosinski's got 8. I think Rosinski's also fought lesser competition, so I think this is going to be a good fight for Rodriguez to prove his mettle. We also got NABF light welterweight title on the line in that fight. It's going to be on Showtime, by the way, too. And it's from Foxwoods in Connecticut. Gabriel Bracero at light welterweight is 17-0 with 3 knockouts, fighting Daniel Sostri, who is 11-4-1 with 4 knockouts. Also on that card, as he actually mentioned, Ryan the Polish Prince Kielczewski.
Nice.
11-0 with 2 knockouts, fighting Willy Villanueva, 10-3 with 2 knockouts. That's super featherweight. So a good card all around. So that'll be on Showtime. And we have a couple other fights worth talking about here. It's an interesting card over in Germany on Saturday. Cruiserweights, Marco Huck, who's 33-1 with 24 knockouts, fighting Rogelio Omar Rossi, who's 17-2-1 with 11 knockouts. That's for the WBO Cruiserweight title. And it's a 12-rounder. We also have 12-round middleweight and heavyweight fights. Middleweights are Dominic Brich, 25-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Billy Lyell, who's 24-9 with 5 knockouts. That's for the IBF Intercontinental Middleweight title. And the heavyweights are Kubrat Pulev, 13-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Travis Walker, who's 38-6-1 with 30 knockouts. That's for the vacant IBF International Heavyweight title. Big titles on the line. Let's see what else we got. I think that's... Go ahead.
We got the fighter that some you know, publications are considering one of the top 5 pound-for-pound boxers in the world. Another Filipino superstar by the name of Manito Donaire. Now that Mayweather's back, I mean, obviously Mayweather, for the long time, you know, Ring Magazine did not write him in his good pound-for-pound because he wasn't active.
Now, the Mayweather is active. He's got to get back to either one or two, depending on how he was. Sergio, I'm going to come up with this.
That fight on HBO this Saturday, bantamweights, Nonito Donaire, 26-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Omar Andres Narvaez, who is 35-0, 19 knockouts, 2 draws, and that's for 2 titles, the WBC bantamweight title and the WBO bantamweight title. Also, featherweights, 10-rounder between Miguel Angel Garcia, 26-0, 22 knockouts, and Juan Carlos Martinez, 19-12, 7 knockouts to his credit, and 1 draw. That's for the NABF featherweight title, by the way. And guy I interviewed when we first started fighting, it was on the MySpace page there. Tommy Raynon is on this card, the welterweight.
He's
got 4 knockouts. He's fighting Brad Jackson, 13-6, 7 knockouts, 1 draw.
What's your story about Tommy
Raynon?
I don't even know if I was waiting for Fight News Unlimited at this time. As you know, I go to a lot of fights, as many as I can. And it was either right after I started covering fights, for FNU, or right before. What went to a fight called the Blue Horizon, and he wasn't in the main event. He was in, one of the co-features. And there was a girl next to me. She was kind of drunk, and she hated him. I mean, and the Blue Horizon is a place where you can, you can hear the fans. When you're in the balcony, you can hear the damn fans. And this girl was drunk. She was like, I hate you. I hope you get your ass kicked. And she's yelling at him and screaming. She heckled him the whole course of the fight. And then he won, and she was really even more pissed. I'll have to look through some of my archives to see if I still have that, If I did cover that fight or not.
Well, there's another funny card I wanted to mention before I get to that one. I want to talk about the Vinny Matalone main event in New Jersey at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City. We got the heavyweights. Vinny Matalone, 33-7 with 24 knockouts, fighting Mike Shepard, who's 20-12 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw. And that's the main event. Light welterweights in the co-main event. Raymond Serrano, 16-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Angel Rios, 9-7 with 6 knockouts. And other interesting fights on that card, we have an 8-round heavyweight fight between Ty Cobb and Chaz Witherspoon. Ty Cobb is 14-2 with 8 knockouts, and Witherspoon is 28-2 with 20 knockouts. Kevin Rooney Jr. is fighting on this card. It's light middleweight, fighting Carlos Perez in his pro debut. Rooney is 2-1 with 1 knockout. Kevin Rooney Jr. I keep seeing his name on some of the promotional stuff, too, so he must be in the best of both worlds there. He's not fighting as a light middleweight. But that's a pretty interesting card. The other card is at the Four Bears Casino. I thought it was kind of funny because we have Nick Running Bear and Chasing Bear on the same card. They're pretty much journeyman fighters, but I thought it was pretty funny. This fight, there was a lot of bears. There wasn't quite four bears, but there was Running Bear and Chasing Bear. There's actually people's names that
not their nicknames that were fighting on this card. The Four Bears Casino, coincidentally. But that about does it for the big time boxing going on this weekend. I do want to mention that the UFC 137 fight card is coming up. That's next Saturday from Vegas. Some other interesting fights in addition to what we already. Nick Diaz at the main event now. We got Hatsu Hayoki versus George Roop. Mirko Filipovic versus Roy Nelson. And this is going to be pretty much one of those fights to decide who stays and who goes, I think. Because both of these guys have had a lot of ups and downs and more downs leading than ups. So we'll see what happens there. But we got Czech Congo versus Matt Mitrione. Congo is like one of the biggest guys you'll ever see with what seems like the least skill he should have for that size. I just don't know what his problem is, but he just seems to have sloppy, ugly fights. He looks like he's new to MMA, and he pulls out miracle wins sometimes, but he's just never technically sound, ever knocks anybody out quick. It's weird, because he's just so huge and muscular. You think he's got to be good. Just one look at him, he's awesome, you think. And he doesn't put together those kind of performances. So I sort of attest and sort of not attest for Matt Mitrione, who seems to be getting better and better with his game. He mixes in a lot of different striking styles. He's got heavy right hands. They call him Meathead on the Ultimate Fighter. So I think it's going to be tough to talk about if Chad Congo is going to try to go that road. I doubt it, but we'll see. Matt Mitrione is going to have a lot to handle in this fight. And Congo can make a fight last, too. That's one thing about him. He might not be able to put Mitrione down or even beat him, but he can make a fight last. And that'll be the only thing with Mitrione I think we have to worry about. But he's probably in much better condition now than he was when he was on the show. He seems to be improving in that area every fight. We also have Jeff Curran versus Scott Jorgensen. Dennis Seaver versus Donald Cerrone. Mark Pelizuski versus Tyson Griffin. Brandon Mira versus Elliot Marshall. Dustin Jacoby versus Brad Tavares. Daniel Downs versus Ramsey Najem. And Francis Carmont versus Chris Cabot. So there you have it. That's the UFC 137 card. And not many big events outside of that going on this weekend. We got a few fights all around the country there. Nothing too huge. And we're going to have a first guest on in a few minutes. Just a couple minutes here. We're going to have Mike Asensio, who is a middleweight fighter, just got off a fight with Chris Cantwell. And that was at UFC 136. He won by decision in that one, came back and won the fight. Got the unanimous decision against Steve Cantwell. Sorry, he's Chris Mick. That was on the Edgar versus Maynard card there. Let's just get him connected. He's a middleweight. He's fought a lot of tough guys. Christoph Sosnitsky was a guy who had a tough match with. Fought Dan Miller back in the day. Just a ball of that.
have reached the Sprint voice mailbox of 973.
Come on, Mike. Come on.
Have reached the Sprint.
All right, well, I guess we'll try him again in a couple minutes.
Maybe he's busy.
He might be. I do have a story that I didn't mention yet. The K1 World Grand Prix got canceled. Apparently, the company is going bankrupt. Basically, you know, it's the one of two of the biggest kickboxing championship circuits, K1. The other one is It's Showtime. And that bankruptcy means no events probably anytime soon there, unless they get some investors. And if they go bankrupt, that'd be a big deal. But it sounds like there's about three or four different big investors, including the guys behind Alistair Overeem. So that's sort of interesting that they're a player in it, and they got Alistair Overeem to sign with the UFC. And, you know, he's the K1 champion right now, the heavyweight champion. So it kind of makes you wonder if they did that on purpose, that K1 would lose its drawing power. I don't know if he's that popular, but, you know, that would make it worth less. So. Golden Glory, and Boss Boone, the folks behind Alistair Overeem, would have a better avenue to come in there and get it for short money. But who knows? Basically, I guess they've been trying to do this for a while. They've acquired some rights to the K1 video library, and they've been trying to get an inroad there for some time. But apparently the major competition there at Showtime is willing to help get the company back to square one and continuing with their events. And there's a couple other investors that are interested in stepping in and saving all this, but it won't be in time to save the World Grand Prix. This is their big... major championship event, so it's not good.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
How you doing?
Good. This is the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show here, too. We're also on the line with Tony Tornado Pennington.
Awesome. How you doing? All right.
Now, Mike, you just had a tough fight back in UFC 136. What was that like, and how is it getting back to training? Back to training already?
Yeah, no, I'm still taking another week. I'll go back into training next week. It was a great fight, and came out in my favor. You know, it was a rough, end of the first round there, but I was able to, pull together and keep my head straight and get everything going, and just turned it into a brawl and was able to, get Cantwell moving back, and it went real well.
brawls are the most kind of fun, though.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. You know what I mean? When in doubt, guys, it's turned into a fight, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's it been like being back and forth here a little bit with the UFC over the years?
Yeah, no, I got into the UFC in 2008. I beat Drew McFedries in my debut, and I ended up fighting CB Dowling. I had some really serious injuries going into that fight. I was on pay-per-view on the main card, and, you know, it was tough there for a little while. You know, I was out for about 20 months, and then when I was about to get back in there, and I was supposed to fight Gerald Harris, and, you know, I got staph infection pretty bad a couple days before I was leaving, and it was ups and downs, man. You know, I fought Brian Sands my first fight back, and then, you know, the UFC had released me. I fought a smaller show and got things back on track and got a TKO win over a pretty tough guy on the East Coast. And then I fought Krzysztof Szczuciński on 3-day notice, which was, you know, a big task in its own, especially I'm an 85-pounder. I went up to 205. And I fought Campbell now and pretty much got right where I was supposed to be and got everything, you know, put on a great performance.
Awesome. And
3 days
notice, geez, that's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, definitely. No, my dream is to fight for the UFC, and that's where I want to be, and I really feel I'm honored, that's where I belong, and whatever it takes. And not even just because of that, you know, I really felt that, you know, it was a good matchup, and I felt that if I, you know, fought the right way, I felt that I could win the fight.
Right. And what was that like, taking it all the way to decision? Obviously, it was a tough loss, but what was it like dealing with the weight difference?
Yeah, you know what, I'm a pretty big 85-pounder. I walk around about 215, but, you know, Krzysztof's a huge 205, you know. He's probably 230, 240 in his off time. But, you know what, he was just really strong and heavy, and he was able to neutralize a couple things I was doing. Plus, you know, I wasn't in the, you know, I wish I had a couple weeks to prepare, but, you know what, take what you can get and take advantage and live in the moment and live for today. And, you know what, it teaches me a lot. It really helped me a lot to go back and look and see some mistakes that I made and capitalize on, and I, you know, implemented them into this past fight, and it, you know, worked out great.
And you know, a lot of tough opponents, a lot of different circuits. Who would you say was the toughest guy you ever fought?
Yeah, you know what, there's some really tough guys. Cantwell being definitely by far being one. I would say Dan Miller, before I even got to the UFC, we fought earlier in our careers, and he was definitely, you know, he's definitely probably another one of the toughest fights I ever fought. First of all, probably those three.
Right. Did you meet Dan Miller back in the day? It's 2006.
Yes, yes.
Reality Fighting 12, where was that?
That was in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
I actually saw that circuit up in Massachusetts a couple times, so that's why I asked.
Okay, yeah, great promotion, yeah.
Yeah, they do it right. I don't know if it was them, but there was one circuit that came to the arena in Plymouth, Massachusetts that had an octagon ring. I think it was them at one time.
Yeah, they, yeah.
Instead of the cage or the traditional ring, they had an octagon ring. And it was kind of funny because the guys couldn't hide it.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a different corner where it's tighter.
Yeah, definitely.
And there was like six ropes instead of four, so he didn't have that problem with it falling out the ring.
Yes.
What's been your greatest moment in this sport so far?
You know what, there's definitely been a couple. I would have to say probably this fight by far has been, you know, the one of the greatest compliments, you know, not just, you know, for my career, but for my, you know, mentally and emotionally. You know, I've wrestled my whole life since I was 4 years old, and, you know, I've put my whole life into this career, and, you know, obviously, you know, everyone that tries to come into the sport, you know, your goal is to become a world champion, and, you know, this adversity, you know, I don't have a lot of fame, I don't have a lot of, you know, backing, you know, I've been living on my own since I was 18 years old, and I've just dumped everything into it, and coming into this fight, you know, I was going out there, you know, just to give it everything I had. You know, walking out to that cage, I really felt that I was at peace with myself, and I was ready to go out there and show the world who I really am.
Right. So, what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for
I'd probably say cardio is definitely one of the most important. I would say, you know, cardio. If you're not in shape, you know, there's a lot of great guys out there who are very technically sound, but if you're not in shape, you know, technique goes out the door when you're winded and you can't breathe. So I would definitely say, you know, cardio and just overall technique itself in every aspect, you know. You can't just be a one-dimensional guy.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing to see how the sport has evolved so much. And one thing that I've been noticing over the past couple of years in particular is there seems to be way more of an emphasis on striking now. And it's, I don't know whether it's because the crowd loves it more or whether the bonus money affects it or what the deal is, but it seems like guys are more inclined to fight on the feet and do a lot of striking. Do you see that in your training, or do you try to implement that at all, or do you see that in the fights that you watch?
Yeah, no, I definitely... You got to be well versed everywhere, but yeah, no, striking is definitely getting bigger, especially with, you know, wrestlers coming out and wrestlers. I feel wrestling is really dominant in the sport, and you know, if you have a good sprawl, guys can't take you down, but you can throw too. You know, that's a good thing to have. But no, for sure, I've been in the boxing gym. My father was a professional boxer, so I've been boxing a very long time, and just haven't had a good chance to really show in my fights. You know what? For one reason or another, you know, I've resorted back to my wrestling. And but no, I really wanted to come on this fight and really show how, you know, that I've evolved everywhere. And like you said, you know, everyone wants to see big knockouts and stuff like that. So I think guys are being more, you know, doing more on their feet as well.
There you go, Tony. His father's a professional boxer. He's our boxing guy.
Rich called me on the show, his boxing rain man, because apparently I have an idiot savant reasoning for knowing way too many stats about the sport. What was your father's name?
Mike DeFenzia. He was a Louisville guy.
Oh, okay. We interviewed Lou a couple years ago. Oh, he was a fun interview.
I've met him a couple times.
Oh, Lou cracks me up. I was, one of the first things I said to him when we got Lou on the show was, back when I was about 15 years old, back in 1992, I went down to, my dad took me to a pay-per-view fight card in Atlantic City. And it was a week after one of Lou's fighters, Meldrick Taylor, out of Philadelphia, and I'm a Philadelphia guy, moved up like one or two weight classes, and he got knocked out by Terry Norris. And I'm sitting there with a couple guys that were older than me. They were about like 19 or 20 years old. They were in the row behind me. And Lou was like at the top of like where the stands were.
Uh-huh.
And they were interviewing him. That's like, you know, when they do like the pay-per-view shows and they always show them looking down on the arena. Well, that's where Lou was seated with. I forget who was doing the interviews. And these 19, 20, 21-year-old guys are shouting up to Lou Duva saying, "Lou, why'd you let Meldrick fight Terry Norris and get beat like that?" So I start yelling it too. "Lou, why'd you let Meldrick, Kelly's one of my favorite fighters, why'd you let him get beat?" And Lou kept cupping his ear like he couldn't hear us. And he was going, "What?
Yeah.
I can't hear you. What? I can't hear you." And we're shouting it even louder, and he just kept going, "What? I can't hear you." We interviewed Lou probably about 2, maybe 3 years ago, and I said, "Lou, I said, I've been dying to ask you a question since 1992. When you were ignoring me down at the Trump Taj Mahal on the Michael Moore Burt Cooper fight card, and I wanted to know why you let Meltzer Taylor fight Terry Norris and get beat like that," and he just went, you know, but oh yeah, what? I remember I said something to him about one of his fights, and this guy has been in corners of hundreds and thousands of fights, world title fights, whatever. And I said something about one of his title fight that I thought my idiot savant memory would remember. And he goes, "Oh, no, no, you screwed the scoring up. It was 116-112. And I popped on Boxrec, and goddamn if he wasn't right.
Oh, man.
Pretty sharp.
Yeah, I'm a Philadelphia. I'm a boxing guy. Like, Rich, you know, he'll make me watch some of the mixed martial arts and, you know, in my core, I'm boxing. I mean, I fought out of Philadelphia. I trained down there. And, yeah, everything I do, it revolves around boxing.
Cool, man. Yeah, I love boxing, too. I've grown up on it a long time, man, you know. You must be a Rocky fan, man.
Oh, of course. I, the last movie that came out, I almost had a speaking role in it.
So, yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was Rich always last when I tell him this. This is before I even started doing the show with Rich. I was they're having open auditions in Philadelphia for professional actors and non-professionals, aka me. And the whole week leading up into it, when they put it in the paper, all my friends are in my ear saying, "Man, you got to get into this. You're an Italian kid out of Philadelphia that boxes. Come on, you got to go to this. You got to go." And I'm pumping myself up, saying, "Yeah, I'm going to go to the audition. Yeah, I'm going to go to the audition." The audition was on Saturday, and I'm up on vacation the week before, and that Monday and Tuesday I'm not feeling too well. I get drugged to the hospital, and I'm getting my appendix removed. And I'm going under the anesthesia, telling the doctor, "You got to let me out by this weekend so I can go audition for the movie." And they're like, "Yeah, you should be out by this weekend, but, you know, you're really going to need to rest." I'm like, "No, I got to go audition for this movie." They're like, "No, do whatever you want." So I talk them into letting me out by the following day. So I'm home 2 days before the audition. And I'm like, "Dad, I can't drive. You have to drive me down to Center City to audition." And he drives me down there, and he drops me off. He went down to get a cheesesteak somewhere. And I'm standing in line, and just by chance, I'm standing in line with a guy that I boxed in an amateur fight about 6 years prior. And he's looking at me, and he goes, "Man, you don't look good." I'm like, "Yeah, Tim, I set my appendix out 3 days ago. I said I'm in a lot of pain because my pain meds are wearing off." He's like, "Don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure you're all right." And he just kind of hung with me. So we go in there, and all these professional people are handing out professional headshots, and all these professional resumes with commercials on it and stuff. Here's my resume. Basically, I fought 30-some amateur fights. I was a two-time All-American. I'm Italian. I'm from Philadelphia. I box. What photo do I have? I have a boxing photo. That's all I got. Everybody's headshots. She's putting them over to the side. She's like, "You, I want to talk to you." "Okay. Would you be interested in reading for a speaking role?" I said, "I thought I'd just be a boxer in a gym hitting a heavy bag." She goes, No. "We'd like to see if you would be qualified to play the part of a drunk, a white trash thug in a bar that starts a fight with Rocky." "You got it." But hey, I didn't get it. I wasn't big enough. When he jacked the guy up, it needed to be a bigger guy. I mean, I'm a big guy. I mean, I'm 200 and some pounds now. When I fought, I was around 175. But height-wise, I'm maybe an inch or so shorter than Sly. And they wanted somebody about a couple inches taller, so he jacked him up, not jacked him down.
Hey, but at least you got that far, man. That was good. That's pretty cool.
I got that, and I did get to be on the set for a couple days. I got a picture of Sly from maybe 5 feet away on the Italian market. I was in the background of that scene, but they just gave a quick edit, so I didn't get seen there. Then they did a last day, they had people running up the steps and doing like little tributes, and I filmed for about a minute and a half, but, you know, mine got cut. My cousin says, he goes, "Come on, you should be throwing punches on the steps. You look better than the star of the movie, man." I'm like, "That's the only compliment he's ever given me in 30-some years, so I guess I'll have to take it."
There you go.
So, anyway.
Hey, it's cool, man. Yeah, I'm a Philly guy.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's awesome, man.
So, Mike, do you find yourself trying to box more in fights because you have that back?
Yeah, you know, I really... Obviously, for some reason I was doing back my takedowns, you know. But going to this fight, I pretty much said, you know, wherever the fight's gonna go, I'm gonna keep it there. I'm not gonna force something, you know. And he was having, you know, he had pretty good takedown defense. I didn't really want to force anything, and I knew he was pretty solid on the ground. And yeah, just let my hands fly. And you know what? In the first round, I felt we were feeling each other out, and it's going well. I felt real sharp, and you know, he was coming off sharp, and you know, me being a southpaw and him being a righty, you know, kind of circled into his power, trying to come back the other way. He just threw an overhand, and it came right over my glove and clipped me. And from that point, the last 2 minutes, it was about surviving and testing myself and just, you know, coming back.
Right. And what's your ultimate goal with this sport?
Become world champion, you know. my goal is to be the best that I can be and be the best. And if your goal is not to be a world champ, if you just want to be average or just want to, you know, this is the wrong sport to be in. You know, everyone, if you're doing this, especially it's not an easy thing, you should, your goal should be to be the best, you know, no matter what. Nothing's impossible. You know, it's the greatest thing about the sport that, you know, one punch, you know, not one big thing can change a, you know, change the tide of a fight, and anything can happen.
What do you think about the title holders in the UFC? You have to get through to beat title holder right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, you know, Anderson Silva is the man. He's the best pound-for-pound guy ever to live, and, you know, it's a great thing. You know, you know what, no matter how, it doesn't matter who's standing in front of you, you know, my goal is to be the best and become a world champion, and you know, I'm just going to keep plugging away and fighting whoever I have to fight, and if someday comes down the line, if he's a champ, and if it's not someone else, or if I'm in that title contention, and I'm looking to go, it's an honor to fight these guys. You know, these guys are the best guys in the world, and no matter who it is, you know, it's just, you got to just go for it, no matter what, anything can happen.
Yeah. And what do you enjoy most about mixed martial arts itself?
Say that again?
What do you enjoy most about mixed martial arts itself?
You know what, just the whole competitiveness and you know, why I loved wrestling so much, and I played other sports, I played football and baseball my whole life too, but the one thing that really caught my eye, what I really loved about, you know, wrestling or boxing or MMA, it's one-on-one. You know, no matter what, you have no one else to blame, you know, you put all these hours in, and just overall, that's just you and that other person, and whoever's going to win, you know, you have no one else to blame, and in the end, the satisfaction of accomplishment, of having your hand raised, is just by far the greatest feeling in the world. You know, wrestling up, I was a two-time state champion wrestling, junior college national champ, but just a whole different level of being inside that cage and having your hand raised is just the whole satisfaction of accomplishment.
What college did you wrestle for?
I had a little, come out of high school, I won states twice, and I won the high school nationals, which ranked me number one in the country, number one recruit in the country at 171 pounds my senior year. And I had some great problems, so I signed to North Carolina State in 2001, and I didn't get a chance to go. I went to West Virginia for two semesters, and then, you know, had some problems, some personal problems there, and just things I had to come back home. And I went to Bergen Community College. I'm actually the head wrestling coach there now. And I took second my first year. I lost to C.B. Dalloway in the national finals my first year. And then the second year, he ended up losing earlier in the tournament, and I didn't get a chance to go against him again, but I won in the Ducos in 2004.
That's cool. Because, I mean, even though I boxed in college, my college is very well-known. Obviously, I've been long out of there. Lock Haven University. I don't know how familiar you are with, you know, that
program. Yeah,
not
for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, I was there, you know, Coach Bonomo was still there at the time. Terry Colot was a friend of mine. He was a great, he was a year or so older than me. So I was, he was one of the guys that gave me some tips on how to cut weight for boxing.
Yeah, we got some great ways of doing that. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I still, my biggest distinction was in the college boxing circuit, and I'm pretty sure this still stands because I don't think anybody else would be stupid enough to ever try it, but I did five different weight classes in one semester.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah. I started at like 185, which was a 190-pound weight class. Then I moved up to heavyweight. Then right back down to 180, then down to 165, then up to 172.
Wow. It's a big jump.
Yeah, it was tough. Well, by the time that was over, I was like, all right, man, I need some time off.
Yeah, I bet.
Hey, Rich, you still there, too?
Hello?
I think we lost the host.
Yeah, we lost somebody.
Yeah, I think we lost the host of the show. That's all right. Rich can't survive without me on the show anyway.
talking about me.
Yeah, we're talking about you, Rich.
I thought that's an hour with that story, so I took a break.
what were you thinking of pee?
So, is there anybody out there, Mike, that you really want to fight right now?
You know what, honestly, I really don't have anybody in particular. You know, down the road, you know, whatever the UFC decides to do, obviously, you know, I'll sit down with my manager and sit down with everybody and decide what I'm going to do. But, you know, I would love to fight CB again. You know, I'd get a rematch in there. But, you know what, my main concern is just trying to keep plugging away and get to the top and just keep doing what I have to do to be the best. And then whoever they put in my way, I'll fight.
And having that wrestling history with CB, what kind of dimension does that add to the rivalry there?
What does wrestling add?
You know, you said you wrestled them in high school, right?
No, in college. Yeah, we wrestled in college, and you know, it was a really good match, and you know, he beat me that day, and he was the better man that day, and we actually fought each other 3 years ago, and you know, he beat me there too. So, you know, I would love to, like I said, if I had one guy, I would like to down the road or whenever it is get matched up against him again. But whoever they put in front of me, I'm gonna fight.
And what would you say? Who's the guy out there that you like the most? Like to watch, like to try to pick things up from being out there like that.
One of my favorite fighters is George St. Pierre. You know, he's just so good, man. And not even being a wrestler, you know, his wrestling, just the way he applies everything and uses everything from his hands to the ground. Just, he's definitely one guy that I watch him fight and watch on videos and just pick him apart and try and take some things.
And what do you think about the growth of the sport overall since the inception? Seems like you started out a couple of years before I actually got into writing and watching MMA. So, what's it been like for you to, be a part of it as it grows to this level that it's at now?
Yeah, no, definitely. When I came into the sport in 2005, I turned professional, and you know, just to see where it's come in a couple years, and then it's only going to get better and better. You know, it's evolving so fast and so much, and now you can't be a one-dimensional fighter. You know, you have to have everything and, know everything. And the biggest thing I think is MMA is starting with little kids now. It's like theater programs, it's building, and you're not just starting as a college kid. You know, kids are being bred to do this. So it's, sky's the limit for MMA by far.
Right. Yeah, it seems like this Fox deal, too, that the UFC just made is making everybody foam at the mouth for what's coming up. I think the Ultimate Fighter show is actually starting to get more popular already, just on Spike. And now it's going to be live next year, so I think that's going to add a lot of intervention to how people see the sport. And it's obviously been one of the keys that's kept the sport going over the years, is that exposure at a young age. Just getting that experience of being a superstar before you even get your first UFC fight.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. The more it's in the public eye, the better, the more, and especially with the younger, with it being, not just being a teenager learning, kids are learning the sport and the discipline and as a young age, it's just going to get better.
Right. And what do you think about Dana White? He's now obviously the big figurehead UFC guy, the president. Have you had any interaction with him personally, and do you like having him as a boss?
Yeah, I haven't had too much interaction. I like him. I don't see any problems with him. Everyone's going to have bad things to say about everybody. But he's done a great thing with the sport. And, he looks out for the fighters, and you know what? At the end of the day as well, it's a business, you know, and you're there to win, and you're there to do your job, and he's there to be, you know, like you said, be your boss and you know, keep the business going and have it grow, and he's not going to take no nonsense. And but if you do right by him, he's going to do right by you, and that's the main thing. I think he's, you know, I think he's a great guy.
And what first got you into fighting in the first place? And you said earlier that you were on your own at 18. Is that right?
Yeah. You know what? Growing up, I didn't have a lot, and I'm from Paterson, New Jersey, so kind of a tough city. You know, growing up as a, you know, in that type of atmosphere, and at 18 years old, I was completely on my own. I went to West Virginia, obviously, for 1 year, but when I came back, you know, just having to pay bills, and at that time, my dream was to be a Division I national champ, so I had to graduate junior college and get with my eligibility clock running, and just a lot of stuff, you know, but just wrestling and the sport of boxing itself, and then seeing that the early UFC stuff just had me hooked.
Do you have a favorite style or punch or anything like that that you rely on?
I try to be as well-rounded as I possibly can, but I would probably say wrestling is my base, you know, takedowns and ground and pound, but definitely proved a lot to myself, you know. If you think about it, this is my first fight. I completely stood up for the most part and traded and slugged it out, and especially with training with such a good stand-up guy as Cantwell, you know, proved myself there.
And how long did it take to recover from a tough back-and-forth fight like that?
Honestly, I'm perfectly fine. I'm ready to train already. You know, I'm just itching to get back in there, and I want to fight as soon as possible. But I could recover pretty well. I had no major injuries. You know, my eyes were swollen a little bit, but that's about it.
Yeah, especially you had pretty tough skin after a while.
Yeah.
Any clue as to what is next for you? Have you talked about who might be on the list?
No, I haven't heard anything. You know, I leave that, you know, my manager does a great job, Mike Constantino of AMA. You know, he's going to handle all that, and he'll keep me informed. And whatever the UFC wants to do, I'm hoping to hear something within maybe the next month or so and find out what's coming up.
Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to or any sponsors, anything you want to mention?
You know what? Just basically, you know, everyone that's been behind me 100%, you know, Palooka.com, the new comics coming out. Just did a big thing at the Comic Con this weekend with them. The other great people over there, they've been behind me. Prince Gear, you know, everyone. I have my own gym that I have in Hope, New Jersey, Tim Iron Horse MMA, all my partners. And just, you know, everyone that's left behind, but just everyone that's stuck behind me through everything. So.
You have your own gym that you run?
Yeah, this is my fourth year in business.
Oh, cool. What's that like? How's that been for you?
Yeah, no, so, you know, it's good. You know, I really like the, it's a good thing to have, you know, it's like a plan B when everything's said and done. You know, I'll have my gym, and I love to teach. I actually was awarded my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt in August under Paul Carnicella, who is Edson Carvalho black belt, first American black belt. So that was really big, and yeah, just teaching and giving back to the sport that's, you know, helped me so much. You know, if it wasn't for wrestling and MMA, you know, I don't know where I'd be, you know. So it's kept me out of trouble. It's kept me straight-minded and focused. So it's a great thing.
Yeah, it's fighting kept me out of trouble, too, at one point in my life. I used to get in all kinds of fights. I grew up in a town called Dorchester in Massachusetts, which is just outside of Boston.
Okay.
At least when I was growing up, there were. I was on the other good side of town, unfortunately.
There you go.
But Paterson, that's the same town with the Reuben Hurricane Carter, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Story.
That's the big thing here too.
And,
you got a couple. We got a really tough couple really tough guys. My first boxing coach, you know, when I was coming into MMA, his name is Barry Porter. His son is Kendall Holt. He just lost this weekend, but yeah, I've been around Kendall a lot, so, you know, being around a world-class, you know, former world champion and stuff like that, I've been around a lot of good people, so definitely keeps, you know, helps you out watching these guys and seeing how hard they train and, you know, gives me motivation to try and do the same thing.
Awesome. A funny story I heard about Hurricane one time. He moved to Canada to get away from all this crap that he had to deal with here with being false, you know, put behind bars for so long. And he's in Canada, and he gets arrested there on a false charge. Somebody gave a description that matched him. And he actually had to deal with him there in jail in Canada. You know, escape all problems here over there. Same thing happened.
Oh, man.
Rough life that guy's had. But,
I love that guy's movie, man. I would love to know that. I watch that movie all the time.
Yeah, it's a hell of a story.
It really is. Yeah, no, for sure.
He was a great boxer on his day. Well, you got any final thoughts or anything else you wanted to mention before we go?
No, I'm good. I appreciate the interview. You know, it was great and talking with you guys. And no, that's about it.
All right, Mike. Well, I'll definitely be keeping an eye on you. We'll be watching for you. And best of luck, whoever you fight next. Keep up the good work. And hands up, chin in, I guess.
So, yeah, definitely. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Have a good
day. Yep, bye-bye.
All right, thanks a lot.
So there you go, there's Mike Massenzio. And I had a couple of little news tidbits I wanted to bring up. Fortunately for you, Tony, they're almost all boxing related. All boxing related. Michael Spinks is suing his former promoter's estate. Have you heard this?
I did hear it, actually. I mean, geez, you know, the guy died and sued him. I didn't see it.
Well, I think that's because the guy died, he had to sue him.
Oh.
Basically, Ronald E. Butch Lewis is his promoter. He's suing the estate of this promoter because he's saying that they failed to properly manage millions of dollars that he earned in his career and violated his agreement to continue paying his living expenses. Which sounds like the real deal problem there, because obviously now the guy has died and you know, his rent's not getting paid or something's going on there. And that was their agreement, I guess. From back in the day, he would always pay his expenses, so that was a pretty important thing to him. Lewis died this year. He's apparently commingled his personal funds with Spinks' money and used the boxer's winnings to pay personal and business expenses for himself and his children. The allegation that Spinks is making in the suit also named Robert L. Johnson, founder of Black Entertainment Television. Johnson,
yep.
One of the executors of Lewis's $8.5 million estate. And it's obviously, it's been a pretty lucrative thing to be a boxing manager for that guy. But Lewis's estate, I guess, has refused to honor his promise and failed to pay any of Spinks' living expenses, so that's a big part of the suit. And this is history. Believe it or not, he was a former used car salesman in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I read that.
He died at the ripe old age of 65. He rose to become one of the boxing world's top deal makers in the late 1970s. According to the New York Times, represented both Spinks as Michael and Leon. So I thought that was kind of an interesting story. You know, Spinks is one of those guys. He's obviously always going to be in the history books. Heavyweight division, got a big name, big career, and his manager apparently died without thinking about what to do about him after all his arrangements they made. something to do. Anyway, David Haye is thinking about going to Hollywood now that he's decided to leave boxing.
Well, yeah, I heard he is a good actor with the foot injuries.
Well, he's gonna try to do it for money, act for money, and basically he's gonna pull a Rampage Jackson. It's gonna be permanent for him. The acting will be something new for me. I want to go into action films. I'm looking forward to it. The next phase for me is trying to become the best possible actor I can be, taking the same sort of philosophy and mindset I had into the ring, into the acting world. And he says it'll be a good way to keep in shape. Manny Pacquiao. I'm sure he's going to have a big fight for the Marquez fight, but is it going to be enough to pay his accountants? That's the problem. He's like $650,000 in debt to his accountants, people who are managing his finances. And usually it's the accountant stealing money from the client. So I don't get this, why they didn't write a check to themselves if they're handling his finances. Apparently they didn't get paid. So I guess they're suing over it. I guess he had a whole ton of tax problems years back. And had to deal with all that. So the accountants probably did earn their money. But for whatever reason, he's not paying them. According to the suit, Manny's tax issues seriously affected his ability to fight. So they were really infringing on his training schedule and all sorts of other details, I'm sure, of setting up a fight. That was kind of interesting. The accountants claimed they straightened out his money problems and even let Pacquiao borrow some cash, but Manny never paid them back and totally ignored the bill. So they filed a lawsuit. That's about it. Now he's about to fight Juan Manuel Marquez. Not sure on the financial details of that one, but I'm sure he's going to be making over $1 million. $2 million. And we have our next guest coming on in a few minutes here. Probably about within 10 minutes, we got Ryan Martinez. Just tell you a little bit about him. He's 5-1. He is the baddest of the bad heavyweight champion and the Rocky Mountain Bad Boys heavyweight champion out there in Colorado. As far as upcoming events this weekend, as you mentioned earlier, we got Heroescape 5, actually tonight, from the Czech Republic. Tomorrow night we got Locked in the Cage 9 from Philadelphia at the Asylum. You're going to get locked in the cage at the Asylum Arena? That sounds like sounds like some Halloween shit right there. Bell Center, Montreal.
I think that's the new name for the arena, which was the new name for the new Alhambra, which was the new name for the ECW arena.
What the hell? Pick a name.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should do it.
I still call it the Alhambra.
That name sounded fine to me. Anyway, we got Ringside MMA 12. It's a big event with Paul Daly versus Luigi Fioravanti up at the Bell Centre in Montreal, Quebec. Super Fight Australia 11 from Perth, Western Australia. These are all Friday night here. VIP edition from Ponce, Puerto Rico. It's put on by Max FC 14. Prestige MMA 3 from Fort McMurray, Alberta, Canada. Legends of Fighting Championship 49 from Indianapolis, Indiana. Invincible from the Grand Sierra Resort in Reno, Nevada. And the MMA Karuma Cup 3 from Moscow, Russia. We also got Resurrection out in Orlando, Florida. That's XCF 14 at the UCF Arena in Orlando. Fight to Win Zombies. Hey, guys. Halloween themed name right there. At the National Western Complex in Denver, Colorado. Our next guest would be fighting with the car. That would be funny. Salem, New Hampshire has got some fights at Rockingham Park. MMA Smackdown at The Rock. It's going on Saturday. Rage in the Cage 156 in Chandler, Arizona at the Wild Horse Pass Casino. We got Hands of War at the Proxy in London. Well, these are on Saturday, Rage in the Cage and Hands of War, by the way. From London, England, Jungle Fight 33 is in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil on Saturday. Danger Zone, CFFC 11, is going on in Atlantic City Saturday. Bellator Fighting Championships 55 is a big fight card coming up. And we actually got hooked up with the Bellator folks. So if you look on our blog, you see the latest Bellator news. We don't put out everything they said. They always send us stuff like what the weights are and stuff like that. And stuff. I don't like to be the website that publishes everything, including the weights, unless it comes with quotes for every fight. I like to do the press conference stuff, the regular press releases, that sort of stuff. But when it comes down to, every single card's weight that I get sent, it's silly. Wouldn't be me at that. But it's Bellator Fighting Championships card is pretty interesting. We got Ed West versus Eduardo Dantas at the Bantamweight Tournament semifinals. And the second fight is Alexis Vila versus Marcos Balbeo. We got Travis Wolf on this card. He's got a really interesting record. He sold up in Worcester, Massachusetts a couple years ago. He's fighting Christian Mpumbu. Steve Eagle versus Ricardo Taruni. Richard Hale versus Carlos Flores. Efrain Escudero versus Cesar Avila. Jacob Ortiz versus Edgar Garcia. Steinbeis versus Dave No More, Nick Piedmont versus Jade Porter, and Herman Beach versus Roscoe Jackson. Travis Wolf, here's his record. 64-14-0. 21 KOs, 23 submissions, and 20 decision wins. That's a fighter record. He's been fighting since, let's see, 2001, September of 2001. His first fight was 4 days before 9/11. Wow. 2001. Rumble and Ramsey. Let's see what else we got for MMA fights. On Saturday, we also have Jackson's MMA Series 6 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Sport Fight 30, look at this, from Gresham, Oregon. No Mercy 2011 from Cicero, Illinois. Operation Octagon 16, UFC is going to come after that. Operation Octagon 16 is happening in Sterling, Virginia. Saturday. Battle at the Fort 5 from Hayes, Kansas. Unleashed Extreme Caged Combat from Easterville, Pennsylvania. Wherever that is. Easterville.
That's above Northeast Philly.
The Fall Brawl in Greensboro, North Carolina. It's also this weekend, Saturday. Extreme Adrenaline Championships. 3 from Fort Ohio. Saturday. We got Legacy Amateur Series from Houston, Texas. Extreme Cage Challenge 4 from Richmond, Indiana. Rumble on the Plains in Snyder, Texas. We got Armageddon. Auburn Hills, Michigan. Watch out for Armageddon. Iowa Challenge in Waterloo, Iowa. Proving Ground 2 in Daytona Beach, Florida. This is a lot of stuff going on Saturday. Annihilation 35 from Fort Collins, Colorado. World Fighting Federation 7 from Tucson, Arizona. Indiana Cage Fighting from Seymour, Indiana. And just a couple more here. Mayhem in Monabo from Monabo, Puerto Rico. And School of Hard Knocks 16 from Esteban, Saskatchewan, Canada. And finally, one fight on Sunday. Tenkaichi Super Fight 7 from Okinawa, Japan. That does it for upcoming fights. We have a caller. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Ryan.
Yeah.
Ryan Martinez, right?
Yes, sir.
Yep. All right. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line with us. He's our boxing expert.
What's up, man? I'm not here in Colorado or what?
You want to try calling back in?
Let me call you right back. You want me to call right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Technical difficulties. Yeah, I always try to tell the agents that it's a lot easier for us to call the people. The sound is never good when they call into the switchboard. That's right, I'm going to blame Blog Talk Radio. I mean, what am I getting for the money I'm paying every month, you bastards? Charge me $40 a month. Let's see if this works any better. All right, Ryan, how's that?
Yeah.
Better?
It's still real staticky.
Yeah, it's going to be because you're on a speakerphone.
Okay.
Set up. So it'll be a little bit loud on your end.
Okay.
All right, so tell us a little bit about, do you have a fight coming up or anything, or anything in the works?
Yeah, I got a fight with Pro Elite coming up November 5th.
Awesome. And what do you like about them? They seem to be coming out of the woodwork with some good fights and some great promotion and big money behind them now, too, I think, right?
Excuse me?
What do you think about Pro Elite, their organization?
I'm pretty thrilled about fighting on it. You know, it's a bigger promotion than what I'm used to, so I'm just, you know, happy to make a step up in promotion companies. And, you know, I'm just real thrilled to fight on a fight card.
Cool. And what got you into fighting in the first place?
I don't know. Maybe a mixture of wrestling, you know, throughout my childhood, and then, you know, just being a knucklehead when I was younger.
I made that feeling.
Yeah. Getting into trouble.
Yeah.
Do you have a fit style or submission or strike that you like to use in fights?
I like to stand up. You know, if it goes to the ground, cool. I can't really say I have a favorite dominant style. I try to be as well-rounded as possible. So I just I try to mix it up and do the best at whatever I can.
And do you have any role models or anybody that really helped you out over the years, inside or outside the sport?
Yeah, my dad, you know, throughout my life, you know, when I was younger, he was always pushing me to put in that extra work and constantly on my ass to, you know, wrestle harder, condition harder, you know, just, you know, giving me that tough mentality, that tough love I needed growing up.
Yeah, it's always good to have that.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say so far it's been your toughest opponent.
I have one loss on my record. Honestly, I'd probably say my toughest opponent was myself because, you know, I lost that fight myself. I was better than the guy who just handed me that night. So, you know, you're your own worst enemy. That type of thing.
Now, that was back in July in this last year.
Yeah, it was against Derek Lewis.
What happened there? It says TKO, but it really doesn't explain.
What happened there? Basically, I left American Top Team, which was a predominantly striking school, and some issues fell out there, which caused me to leave, and I was stuck with 3 weeks to train to prepare, you know, a game plan for Derek, and just, you know, transferring to another school, not being familiar with your coaches, not being confident in your corner, and going from a striking school to a jiu-jitsu school, just, it was all a major head game. So, you know, I blame that loss on myself. I would love to rematch him, you know, see what the outcome would be now.
And what's the circuit like where you're at there in Colorado?
Colorado's got real tough fighters. I mean, you got your Shane Carwins, your Brendan Shaws, you know, your Joe Warren, your Chris Camozzi, you know, just it's a strong wrestling state, and the breed that comes out here, you know, they're second to none. I mean, they fly in guys from all over to the Colorado shows for us to fight. You just see Colorado guys mopping, dudes. It's crazy, you know. Just it's crazy that we're such a tough state right now. And from what I understand, after talking to people, you know, in other organizations down in Florida, down in New Mexico and stuff, they, you know, they say the same thing. They want to come fight in Colorado organizations because they treat their fighters a lot better. Which I don't know. This will be my first time fighting out of state.
And did they sign you to an exclusive contract when you work with Pro Elite, or do you get to fight wherever you want as long as it doesn't fight?
I don't think it's exclusive. I think it's strictly for the tournament. If they like the way I perform, you know, after the first round or whatnot, if I win the tournament, I'm sure it goes from there. But as far as I'm aware, I think it's fight by fight. So, like, if I win the first round, then I fight second round, you know, and so on. But if something happens and I lose the first round, then I don't know what happens if they release me or what.
And what's your ultimate goal with the sport?
I want to be a world champion. That's just it. Right. I want a belt around my waist.
Well, as a heavyweight, that means you got to go through some pretty big guys, obviously.
Yeah, and that's I'm a small heavyweight, one of the smallest out there. You know, I'm 5'11", so I got to work my ass off twice as hard.
Jeez, that is pretty short. So is it tough dealing with, obviously you probably have a reach disadvantage, right?
For sure.
How do you get over that? Do you go in there with the Mike Tyson peekaboo style?
Exactly, man. You just got to go for it. You can't be scared. You can't be scared to engage and stay in the pocket. You just got to work your angles and, you know, be patient. You can't just go blow your load your first round.
Right. And what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing for me is, you know, lots of live action, lots of live sparring, live drilling, you know, just stuff that makes you want to quit, basically. Your strength and conditioning, of course, you know, you got to have someone to push you to the point where you don't want to do it, where you just want to walk off and be like, I quit. And then your coach is just making you drill to the point where you don't want to do it no more. You get so sick of drilling the same thing, you're like, oh my gosh, just leave me alone.
Yeah, but you know it's good for you. It's like eating your vegetables that you don't like.
Yeah, yeah. If you're hating anything you're doing, they're doing their job. For sure.
And how about other fighters out there? Is there anybody you watch a lot of and try to pick things up from?
Honestly, I watch a lot of everything. You know, I'm a big guy, so I can't say that I have a favorite heavyweight fighter. You know, I like Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. They're both, you know, they're little guys, but they're so on their game. I like Anderson Silva. I like DJ Penn. You know, I like a lot of fighters. I can't say I try to mimic anyone because, you know, I'm 5'11", 265 pounds.
Yeah, not too many people out there.
Yeah.
That's a classification. So what would you say was your best moment in the sport so far?
My best moment?
Yep.
Just seeing myself progress, you know, through the smaller promotions onto the bigger ones, onto, you know, one of the biggest, that's probably my best moment in the sport so far. There's just so much. Like every time you win a fight, it's the best moment of the sport, you know what I mean? So there's really not one in particular moment I could say I cherish more than all.
Yeah, that's always a pretty good feeling when you get the hand raised at
the end. Yeah, for sure, especially with the crowd full of people that are cheering you and you only know maybe one or two of the fans.
And as far as, you know, the future there, do you know exactly who you're fighting in this pro league fight?
Yeah, I'm fighting a guy named Mark Ellis. He was a NCAA Division I wrestling champ in 2009. He's fought in the promotion one other time against a guy named Jake Ewan. He's a big, strong wrestler from what I've seen on video. I mean, I can't really tell a whole lot from a video. I know he's the anchor of the tournament from what they say, so we'll see what happens, man.
And what do you think about some of these other organizations outside the UFC that are, you know, coming out and trying to put on some big shows like this, Pro League?
What do I think about them?
Yeah.
I think it's good, you know. I mean, without like the Bellators, the Pro Elite, the Shark Fight, you know, there wouldn't be another level for us to show what we got to get into the UFC. So I think going to an organization like, you know, the Bellators, the MFCs, the Pro Elite is just, you know, it'll get us more on the UFC's radar, because I think that's everybody's ultimate goal, you know, is to be in the UFC, to fight in the big show. So being on one of these organizations, it's like, yeah, man, it's like basically a chance of a lifetime. And if people have already been there trying to get back, you know, sure, these organizations, they're a feeder program to the UFC.
And what do you think about the whole aspect of the tournament?
The tournament, I think it's great. You know what I mean? There's like nowadays when we first got into the fight game, there wasn't too many people like, you know, thinking that the whole MMA scene was for them. And then all of a sudden here in 2011, everybody's a fighter. They go to one jiu-jitsu practice and they're, you know, they're training for a fight. And you know, there's a lot of hidden talent that's not on the radar. You know, there's talent all over the U.S., all over the world that, you know, people don't see. And for me, I think it was just, you know, a luck of the draw for me to get called up and be like, hey, will you fight in our tournament? I was, you know, opportunity was knocking, so of course you got to take that. As far as the tournament goes, I think it's good, you know, to see, you know, who the next, you know, the next up and coming heavyweight is, the next big thing, you know. Hopefully, you know, it's all downhill from here. You know, you got to fight. You fight to win. You win, then, you know, the only thing that can come more is more blessings. You know.
Right. And what would you say is the thing that you love most about the sport of mixed martial arts?
Just I love the adrenaline rush. You know, I got a good support system here at home. You know, with my wife and my kids and just my family that are allowing me to chase a dream. Just, you know, seeing your kids just, oh my God, my dad's a cage fighter, this and that. That's a pretty cool feeling. But in all, just like the aspect of going in there, you know, getting caged in. You're in a closed cage. There's only one way out. You know what I mean? You either win or you lose. You can't blame no one else but yourself, you know, for winning or losing.
Right. And what do you think about the growth of the sport over the years?
The growth is immaculate. I can't believe how big it's gotten. You know, one thing, only if they paid like the boxers get paid, you know what I mean? That would make everybody want to fight. But just, it's crazy how, you know, like Tap Out, how they started off, you know, spray paint shirts, and they blew up. That's kind of the same thing. You know, UFC showed up and then got banned, and then all of a sudden, you know, little organizations started showing up, and then now everybody's a fighter. You walk down the street, you see a kid wearing a Tap Out shirt, and he's like, yeah, I train at so-and-so. Oh, really? You know, and it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's
well, along these same lines, I have a good friend that said the same thing. I mean, he loves MMA fighting more than anything. I mean, he has Tap Out stickers on his car. He wears Tap Out hats, you know, and he only ever had like three training sessions. And I was joking, like, for his 30th birthday the other year, I was talking to his cousin, who like I grew up with, and I was like, yeah, what am I going to get your cousin for a surprise party? I'm like, and I have like a couple Ringside and Everlast, you know, catalogs, and I got him like, you know, a couple things, and one of them was a shirt, and like, ground and pound or whatever. I'm like, provided that if he ever fought, he would be the one grounded and pounded.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, the fans of the sport, you know, you got to love them, man, regardless. They're supporting it 100%. And every day, you know, there's probably three or four more fans from the boxing side, you know. Usually the boxing fans are like, oh, MMA, that ain't a sport. That's, you know, It takes a lot more balls to stand toe-to-toe with someone for 12 rounds. And then all of a sudden, you know, they start getting into MMA, and then they're like, damn, I didn't really know this, you know, it was like that. This is tight, you know. I want to start training MMA. So, you know, it just, everybody changes their mind after they get into it, you know what I mean? But still, you still got them dudes who wear their Tap Out affliction and train one or two times and think they're the baddest man on the planet.
My buddy, he's a hell of a nice guy. I mean, I said I've known him since we were a little kid. And he was saying something one time. And I was like, do you remember when you and I put the gloves on when we were 14 years old? He's like, yeah, how can I forget? I'm like, yeah. It lasted 20 seconds with 10 of it being the count.
We were talking the other night, and he's having some personal issues, and he's driving home, and I'm talking to him about, Halloween party that we're throwing next week. And
yeah.
He's having, comes at home, and he's like, yeah, I'm mad right now, and I got this road rage or whatever. And he lives about 30 minutes from me, and I passed somebody who's tailgating him. He's like, all right, and I'll fight him. Oh, yeah, come on, get out of the car. Get out of the car. I'm like, oh, boy. I'm like, I'm about to jump in my car and see if I can get to his house to save his ass before he gets his ass whipped by some random stranger. Here was my thing with the whole topic. And I always say that growing up, I was looking for an identity. I was kind of a lost person. I wasn't the best athlete in school. I played football. I was, a second stringer. I wasn't the smartest kid. I wasn't really in any activities. And I was angry. So I wanted people to notice me. So I would fight anybody. And it had to.
Yeah.
And I always say, because we had kids, around my neighborhood that, hey, me and you got a problem. Let's stand up and let's go. Have to bring other boys, or they have to bring a cat or something. And I'm like, I always say, you know what? Me and you, one-on-one, no weapons, no friends. Let's go mano-a-mano. Or mano-a-mano, however they call it. And nobody would ever do that. I'd get my boys. I get my boys. I'm like, no, you don't need your boys. I don't need my boys. Let's settle it, And then I was, I thought I could take anybody. But then I'm like, I really got to get productive in doing this. I mean, looking at back in now in my 30s, I'm like, a lot of these guys had no shame because they were afraid to confront me. Who would have said they wouldn't have, maybe waited for my mom to come home from work and attacked her? Or I had a dog, who said they wouldn't, shot my dog with a pellet gun or whatever, or poisoned them. You think about it now. You don't think about it then. I needed something productive. Boxing was productive.
Yeah, for sure.
And I had to prove myself to who I was for the longest time. When I started boxing, I got some confidence in myself, and I tell every person I train now, whether you're 50 years old, whether you're 15 years old, I said, you don't got to prove nothing to nobody. I said, after a while, and I was sitting there looking at all these guys that I had problems with for all them years, and I said, how I prove myself to you? Come buy a ticket, and I'll prove myself to you.
For sure. That's the way it goes. I mean, if everybody did that, the world would be a greater place for sure. You got your gangsters and whoever else that are always trying to prove how bad they are and whatnot, and then you get some dude off the street that's just humble, humble pie, and they're like, all right, well, let's do this, let's go here and we'll get it. Leave your boys at home. I'll leave my boys at home, and it'll just be me and you. It don't happen like that no more.
Right. Yeah. So, it's definitely something I've seen.
I'd
get a lot of people out of trouble just getting into
it. Yeah, for sure it would. It would have kept, from where I'm from, stuff's real crazy down here too. And if half of them would have ended up with some kind of, program, it might have ended up all right for a lot of these people. But like a lot of people that I hung out with back in the days, they're all doing, they're doing time right now. And it's sad to see, man, just because we were stupid knuckleheads when we were younger.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad says it best. My dad is now 63 years old. He goes, it's a shame that youth is wasted on the young. And I get that now. Because, I'm not in the shape I was 15 or so years ago. I mean, I still have my mind is still great, and I can still teach guys a lot of things. But, my knees are bad. My knees started going on me when I was 17. I've had shoulder problems. I've had a bunch of that stuff. And I'm like, man, I said, if I had the mind that I have now with the physicality I had 15 years ago and the knowledge of sports and boxing, like I said, I learned so much over the years as I was doing it and practicing and getting better. And I said, as I was getting better, obviously I was getting older and, things were breaking down. The body part was breaking down. I said, if I can throw what I have in this mind into what I had in that body 15 years ago, my God, I might kill somebody.
Yeah.
You want to invent a machine? Is that what you're saying?
What?
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I agree with you 100% on that.
Well, one thing about got me into fighting. It's kind of a weird situation back in the 80s when I grew up. The thing was, it was just starting to really, you know, make headway. It was, you know, anything you said to somebody, they'd just be like, your mother, you know. And the trend really caught on back then. So my mom died when I was young. And whenever anybody said that to me, even as a kid, I would slip out on them. And that would flip my switch. It was almost like you were doing it on purpose, whether you knew or not. It gave me an excuse to fight. So I got into so much trouble for that just because that became my switch, you know. And I just went after people. And I think that happens with a lot of us who end up fighting in some capacities, that we just have that moment where our talent scares us just enough to say, I have to do this professionally, or I have to get structured with this, because it's just going to hurt people in the long run, and that's no fun after a while. You know, maybe the first few times when you get into some wars where the other guy started it, but, you know, once you realize that you just have the ability to really, you know, not only ruin someone's day, but, like, really badly injure them if you go too far, I think that's what throws a lot of people into doing it in an organized fashion. And yet at some point, you also, too, have to start learning the respect for the other person, even though you are fighting them, you know, for a paycheck or whatever. When you're in a sport, you still have to have that respect for the other person, where in the streets, you typically don't. You know, the idea is, the whole thing is about hate, usually. And in a sport, you don't hate the other guy, so it's a whole different dynamic, but a lot of people do much better under that than going out there out of hate and doing something stupid, like you said.
Yeah, for sure. Always got to be, no matter what, you know how dangerous they are.
And as far as, you know, looking back on your career, when you look at, you had some amateur fights too. What was it like kicking into MMA at the stage that you did? I mean, it's back in 2009, it shows on this record here, was your first fight, so it was, the sport was already very well established then, wasn't it?
Are you talking about my amateur?
Yes, it shows on here. You went back to 2009, was your first amateur fight?
Yeah.
Before that?
I got out of at the 2008. I had to do a little bit for me. Go ahead. I to on the early 2000s. So I mentioned guys on the expert shows. You should try. And there just
went from.
Hello?
Yeah, we're losing you a little bit. You're going in and out.
Oh, yeah. I got out at 08 and I started training. And, my first fight.
Hello.
Yeah, out of trouble.
Yeah, we're just keep cutting out on us.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Yep. So you were saying your first fight was in 2008? I think that's all we got.
I got out of prison in 2008. My first fight was on time. Yeah, I did some time to be in the knucklehead, and I just ran to the right people at the best time.
Right. Well, it sounds like you got some reception issues there.
Yeah. I'm all the way out here in Greeley.
Yeah. Up in the mountains or down the valley?
Yeah, down the valley.
Well, I don't know if we can get through the rest of it, but if you could just give us, is there anybody out there you want to give a shout out to or say hello to, sponsors or anything like that?
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to my sponsors, Hostility Fight Gear, Southern Honda, Underground Glass,
Lake, One Stop Fitness, Infinite MMA, Better Magic, Better Management, and Sting Mask.
All right. I think we got most of those in there. That's good. What is this training mask? I keep seeing this, sir. What is that all about?
It's an elevation mask. It allows you to get different elevations, different oxygen, and you're touching to increase red blood cells. So you're picking out elevation with a mask on.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, Ryan, it was great talking to you, and enjoyed the different aspects of talking about your career and all that, and we'll definitely keep an eye out for you. Is there any final thoughts you want to leave everybody with? All right, we didn't get all that, but it sounded like you were saying watch the fight. Good card.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah. Pro Elite, yes, it's on the ride. I will definitely be interested in seeing what they do with it. And it sounds like a good idea to start this big tournament right off the bat. We just hope it doesn't turn out like the Strike Force tournament with people bombing out.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Everybody to the facts. you got the guy who was the K-1 champion there going to the UFC right after this tournament was not even over yet. So kind of crazy there. But Pro Elite sounds like they got the right idea. They have a little bit of the structure they had from before. They used to have a really good website, but apparently they couldn't do that anymore. But anyway, best of luck to you, and thanks for stopping by. We enjoyed the conversation, and we'll be in touch. Hopefully, maybe sometime
right on,
down the line when you're in the title hunt, we'll have you back on.
Sounds good, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
All
right,
see you later.
So there you have Ryan Martinez, 5-1 record according to mixedmartialarts.com, but there's obviously some kind of discrepancy with his amateur record, so maybe we ought not to trust that site. I know Sherdog's always being thrown under the bus for having bad records, but these are the ones that I was sent for these two fighters tonight by their manager, so I figure that was the one people trust. But anyway, we're running out of time here. We've only got about 10 minutes left. I don't really have much more to cover. Unless there's something else you got, Tony, I think we're going to call it a night.
We'll call it a night, man, until next week.
So next week we're going to have some good boxing matches to discuss, and we'll be a little bit closer to UFC 137 next Saturday. Adios, folks. Hasta la vista. All that good stuff. And thanks for stopping by. See you next week. Thanks,
all
George.
Right.
Got to thank our sponsors, too. Cocaine Energy Drink, ZionShop.com. All those folks. And that's it. We're out.
Out.
Later.